Honorable Tommy knows, and we're here at the bunker in Warsaw, Indiana, 46581.
And this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, here in the heartland, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, transmitting to the world.
Looks like another lone wolf type took care of his business out there in L.A. No matter, I wonder what his business was, but we don't know about that yet. But any individual can become a lone wolf for many reasons. So I think they've got their job cut out for them chasing lone wolves. What's amazing to me is that they think they can get rid of racism. They can. What took thousands of years to develop in tribalism and so forth, and they think they can get rid of it, especially in only 30, 40 years, they must be out of their mind. All they're going to do is drive it underground. And you know what happens when you drive people underground? They get mean and dirty. Much more mean and dirty than if they're able to express themselves openly and not have to worry about being thrown in jail. Here's another reason why we have to encourage the dismemberment of that Frankenstein kosher monster, EU. Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft, and YouTube have signed on to a new rules to tackle online hate speech. Good luck. The Internet titans agreed on Tuesday to a new code of conduct by the European Union. That takes aim at illegal hate speech. Well, illegal hate speech? Well, speech should be speech unless it's somebody planning a robbery or something. And a terrorist propaganda posted online. Under the new rules, they have committed to reviewing within 24 hours of receipt of the majority of notifications about a social media post that may contain hate speech. They've also agreed to remove the post if necessary. Come on, do it. I dare you. Under the rules, the companies will also communicate with one another, with governments and law enforcement agencies about keeping up with potential abuse. Very interesting. Whoa, wait a minute, I lost my place. Every once in a while that happens. Quote, "There is no place for a hate speech on Facebook," unquote, said Monica Brickert, head of global policy management at Facebook. Quote, "We urge people to use their reporting tools if they find content that they believe violates our standards so we can investigate. Our teams around the world review these reports around the clock and take swift action." Karen White, Twitter's head of public policy in Europe, echoed the sentiment. "We remain committed to letting the tweets flow," she said. "However, there is a clear distinction between freedom of expression and content that incites violence and hate." That's bullshit. Free speech is free speech. If you talk about violence and hate, and if you haven't acted out an actual attack on somebody, that's totally free speech. They know it. We know it. But come on. Come on. I'll stick my chin right out there. Let them go. They kicked me off Facebook, but I don't want on Facebook. People put too much stuff on Facebook. Karen White, Twitter's head of public policy in Europe, echoed this sentiment. Quote, "We remain committed to letting the tweets flow." Well, I already read that. "In addition to removing abusive posts, the EU and the big companies will look to balance hate speech by promoting independent counter narratives and supporting educational programs that encourage critical thinking." Well, most hate speech comes out of critical thinking, you idiot. Not all of it, but a lot of it. Twitter wants to leverage the platform's incredible capabilities to empower positive voices to say just exactly what we want them to say and nothing different, to challenge prejudice, and to tackle the deeper roots of intolerance, White said. Well, like I say, tolerance is suicide. Tolerance is suicide. Well, I see the neo-Nazis have been busy. Whatever that is. Neo-Nazis in Belisa, Georgia, are so angry over a vegan restaurant's existence that its members hurled grilled meats at the customers. Police were called to the Kiwi Cafe after sausage-hurling neo-Nazis barged into the establishment. The attackers, who allegedly take issue with the business' LGBT clientele, hurled sausages at paying customers who were watching an English-language film. Quote, "They pulled out some grilled meat, sausages, fish, and started eating them, then throwing them at us. And finally, they started to smoke," the Kiwi Cafe said Monday on his Facebook. "Knowing that all the above is forbidden here, they were just trying to provoke our friends and disrespect us. We said that they must leave because this is a vegan cafe and because it is our place and we don't want them to provoke a conflict with their behavior. but they didn't leave and started yelling, laughing, and talking to us sarcastically. They said things like, "Why are you so aggressive? What about love?" I never understood this type of activity because I've always said if the homosexuals are going to meet, that's good. Let them have their own place and meet and separate from other people. LGBT people the same way. Why would you want to attack a bar full of homosexuals and spread them all over the neighborhood? No, the right wing just doesn't get it on tactics. They almost always do something wrong. In this case, the fight broke out that carried over into the street, but the group fled before the police could arrive. They were busy having donuts. Locals joined in and fought on behalf of the neo-Nazis. Oh, jeez. Fox 5 New York reported Tuesday. Wow. See, there's something else here. One policeman was very aggressive, pushed us, yelled with anger, and said that we are guilty of what happened. Some cafe workers were brought to the police office for interrogation. In spite of the situation and everyday negative attitude to us and other people who visit us, cafe is continuing to work and is ready to accept all customers, regardless of nationality, race, appearance, age, gender, sexual orientation, religious views, even if they're neo-Nazis. Oh, that's hilarious. Well, old Presidente says he wasn't really into the transgender bathroom controversy. President Obama downplayed his role in the transgender bathroom controversy Wednesday, saying he hasn't pushed the issue in his administration and he believes there are more pressing problems in the country. Somehow people think I made it an issue. I didn't make it an issue, Mr. Obama said at a town hall-style event in Elkhart, Indiana. Asked by a voter why transgender bathrooms had become such an important subject, the president replied, "There's a lot of things that are more pressing. You're absolutely right." Well, that's true. I got the answer. Any place where they want a transgender bathroom, give them a porta potty. Yeah, just rent a porta potty and shove it out behind the school and you'll be all set. Yeah. Didn't stipulate what kind of bathroom.
Uh-oh, we got a problem here, boys.
The Santos Party House, a popular New York City venue partially owned by Andrew W.K. and Despot, whoever they are, has been closed following a neo-Nazi controversy over the weekend. The venue hosted the second night of New York City Oi Fest, a punk festival with ties to neo-Nazis that has been condemned by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Oh, my God. Run for your lives. The Southern Poverty Law Center condemns it. Oh, my God. It has yet to be confirmed if he closing had anything to do with the festival controversy, although the club manager, Sean Kane, stated that their lease had expired. Quote, "It was a 10-year lease. Our lease is up. We're not renewing it," unquote, he told DNA Info. While on Twitter, Despot denied any knowledge of a New York City Oi Fest and stated that he tried to put a stop to it once the press found out. All you skinheads are going to have to find a new place to perch, looks like to me. And this story about Taylor Swift is making the rounds again. Labeling her as an Aryan goddess. Well, she is very beautiful, but there's hundreds of thousands of white girls that are about the same, just as good looking. As far as I'm concerned, they're all Aryan goddesses. Yeah. Here's another dastardly attack. Joshua Bernstein said he and his daughter Rosa on Memorial Day were playing catch and pitching at school in the South Hills of Eugene. I guess that's Oregon. Rosa started getting tired, so they sought shade in the shelter near the baseball field at the former Crest Drive Elementary School. But when Bernstein noticed swastikas and other Nazi graffiti scratched into the paint of a wood counter in the shelter, at first he said he was confused. Then he got angry. Quote, "It obviously angered me as a Jewish person, but also as a resident here," said Bernstein, who's a human resources manager for the local government agency. Quote, "Either there are people out there, neighbors or fellow residents, who believe in Nazism, or people say it's just dumb kids. That tells me there are people who think this is an acceptable way to challenge authority. In either case, it upsets me." It also was confusing to 8-year-old Rosa, who has learned about the Holocaust, Nazi Germany, in Hebrew school and in public school, Bernstein said. Quote, "She was more confused than hurt," he said. "It's the first time she saw something like this in person, as opposed to seeing it in video books or on TV every night." The Eugene School District closed Crest Drive Elementary in 2001 because of budget cuts. The Eugene School Board last year agreed to move the family school from the Arts and Technology Academy to the former Crest School. The family school is a project-based program where students learn in multiple grades of classrooms and families are involved in classroom activities. Well, there you go. They really screwed that place up, those dirty, dirty neo-Nazis. I figure those dirty neo-Nazis love all this publicity. Man, they get pages and pages, newspapers all over the country, and even in foreign news. You put a swastika on a bench or something by a school, it goes worldwide, man. Well, a teenager over in Poland was arrested the last few days for allegedly smashing a Holocaust monument and scrawling anti-Jew slogans and a neo-Nazi symbol on it. Give him 100 years in an electric chair. Wow, here goes another Hitler rumor. Historian Florian Katanko believes birth records from the former Nazi leader's hometown reveal he had an older sibling, and he may have played a bigger part in his rise to power in Germany in the 30s than ever imagined. Hitler was born on April 20, 1889, in Braunau am Inn in Austria, and was the fourth of six kids born to Alois Hitler and Clara Pohls. But now, it is thought he actually had another younger brother who was born 3 years after him on June 17, 1892. However, the boy is said to have died just 6 days later of hydrocephalitis, a brain swelling condition. Mr. Kontanko suggests this death when Hitler was at a young age may have shaped the fascist worldview. He said the conclusions of many Hitler biographers about the mental development of Adolf Hitler, who allegedly received special attention from his mother Clara, as the only surviving child after the deaths of three siblings, are no longer tenable. How was the 3-year-old Adolf Hitler confronted with the birth and death of his brother? Was Hitler aware of his brother's condition? And how might it have affected him and his worldview? I think it pissed him off, so he invaded Poland. Simple.
Adolf Hitler, one of the most reviled names in history, became infamous for his political ideas and his ruthless methods of carrying them out. But did you know that before he became the Führer, Hitler wanted nothing more than to become an artist or architect? In fact, he painted dozens of works in his youth, and even applied to the Vienna Academy of Fine Arts twice, once in 1907 and once in 1908, but was rejected both times. Dozens of paintings by Adolf Hitler were on show for a private viewing in Nuremberg on Wednesday, as the Weidler Auction House gets set to put the pictures and documents under the hammer to be awarded to the highest bidder. This collection is being auctioned off 6 months after Hitler's painting of Neuschwanstein Castle in Bavaria was sold to a Chinese buyer, fetching 94,000 euros, or over $100,000. Auction owners currently have no valuation on how much this collection will bring in, as the market for works by Hitler is quite unknown. Hitler's rejection from the Vienna Academy of Fine Arts and the subsequent outbreak of World War I had a major impact on his political philosophy, and the foundation for his infamous work, Mein Kampf, was laid during this time. The auction, which includes images that Hitler painted in both Austria and Germany, will begin on Saturday, as artists and collectors will begin to price out the works of a budding artist with a future that could have been bright, but instead led to one of the darkest periods in Europe and the world.
Rockley.
Well, there you go. It's not too late. You can still get your tickets to get over there to Germany and buy some of these pictures by Uncle Adolf. Wow. What a collection. You notice how the Chinese don't give a shit what people think about that stuff? The guy paid $100,000 for one of the pictures. Chinaman. He didn't care. Yeah, because they're racist too, very racist. I think we better start being nicer to the Chinese, at least the ones who believe in racial separation. Well, here's some hot stuff. Marvel Comics. If you've been paying any amount of attention to the Marvel Universe this past week, you're already aware of the backlash surrounding Nick Spencer's reveal regarding Steve Rogers at the end of the first issue of Captain America, Steve Rogers. For those of you not in the know, the final page of the comic is a full-page splash of Cap uttering that wonderful catchphrase that's been bandied about by villains in the MCU and its fandom for the past couple of years. Hail Hydra! Responses to the first Avengers betrayal have been, in a word, heated. It's clear that Spencer is playing up the shock value factor in order to get readers, just like comics have done since their inception. But there's an important angle to this that many Marvel fans picked up on, namely the erasure of Steve Rogers' creation by two Jewish men at a time when anti-Semitic sentiment in the States was at alarming levels. His new affiliation with Hydra essentially posits Cap as a neo-Nazi sleeper agent. Or no, there's no getting around the fact that the current iteration of Hydra exists as a thinly veiled metaphor for the Third Reich. Pushback to this argument has ranged from defending the shock tactics in order to boost sales to highlighting the fact that Hydra's history in comics hasn't always included Nazi overtones. And while there is vitriol being thrown by both sides, there's some important facts to consider. First off, the outcry from members of the Jewish community, wah, wah, is valid and deserves to be heard, and not silenced or waved away. Well, I'm sure it won't. The Holocaust happened just 71 years ago. 71! Not a century, not two centuries, but a span of time that's about a handful of years less than the expected lifespan in the U.S. That's 6 million Jewish deaths that are only one or two generations away. For perspective, that would be as if the population of Washington, D.C. had been completely eradicated. Since it's mostly black and white crooked politicians, that wouldn't be bad right now. Roughly 2% of the population in the U.S., that means that the statistically one out of every 50 people you know had ever met while living here would be dead. The sheer numbers are staggering and something that's absolutely must be taken into account when comic fans rush to defend this decision. If a tragedy on the scale had a direct effect on you and was exploited as a last paid stinger in order to sell issues of a book, odds are you wouldn't take it lying down. I'm certainly not. Me either, boy. Second, the argument that Hydra hasn't always been associated with Nazism is a flimsy one at best. Worse, it's elitist because it's supposed that the anger surrounding the reveal is carried by bandwagoners who have only seen the movies or don't have a deep an understanding of the comics as the Hydra apologists feel that they should. Art does not exist in a vacuum. The popular perception of Hydra, thanks to the MCU, is that it's a branch of the Third Reich. Comic book heroes are mainstream now, and as such, they now have popular perceptions surrounding them. The Hydra, most new fans know, is one founded by the Red Skull with deep ties to fascism. Oh, man, this is terrible. Their mannerisms, their salute, their uniforms are aesthetic. All of it is crafted with the intention of evoking that gut familiarity, that unease that comes with the watching newsreels from the 30s and watching ranks of goose-stepping SS. And it works. It works very well. But when it crosses the line and makes Jewish people unhappy, it's the responsibility of the artist to acknowledge the pain of the marginalized groups and not to attempt to dictate to them what is and isn't oppression and exploitation. Wow. Oh. The deeper problem is that this isn't the first time Marvel has exhibited callous disregard for the Jewish community, nor is it the first time that there's been pushback against it. The whitewashing of Pietro and Wanda Maximoff in the Avengers Age of Ultron was only made worse by the fact that their powers were no longer natural mutations, but the result of Hydra's medical experiments. Experiments that they volunteered for. If the fact of that two canonically Jewish Roma would sign on with neo-Nazis doesn't set off enough alarm bells, consider doing research on Mengele and the actual medical experiments carried out on Jew prisoners. At the end of the day, comics will move on. Steve Rogers will probably be back at his regular self in a few months' time, but the shadow of what Marvel has done will still be there. Every single comic fan who tried to shout down those upset by this reveal will still be there. And the next time something like this happens, there will be fewer who speak out against it. That scares me. The possibility that I might one day not say anything because I know nobody will take it seriously, or that they'll deem it unimportant. The comic book community as a whole seems to have a massive empathy problem, and with the increasingly mainstream nature of comics, it's not something we can afford to ignore any longer. Because the Nazis are coming, the neo-Nazis are everywhere, and they're taking over the comic industry, and it's terrible. It's terrible. Run for your lives, Jews! Well, that convinces me of one thing. I've had all these Donald Duck comic books for a long time. I want to dig them out and have a big bonfire and get rid of them because I know they're permeated with racism and Nazi stuff. Yeah, they're not going to fool me. Or as the old cliche says, you can't kid me, I'm too stupid. Well, as a big Christian rock star has come out as gay or homosexual. quote, "I never wanted to be homosexual," unquote. Trey Pearson said, quote, "I was scared of what God would think and what all these people I loved would think of me," unquote. "But I did it anyhow. I am declared, I'm out of the closet. I'm a white homosexual." Well, can a gorilla be a victim of Pope Francis' throwaway culture? A few weeks ago, I rediscovered a pamphlet that I'd had in my library for 25 years called Eugenics Manifesto, which I didn't pay too much attention to in years past for some odd reason. But anyhow, I read a partial, about half this manifest to you a few weeks ago, and now I'm going to read some more of it to end up this show, because I'm much more impressed than I started to be when I first opened it up years ago, and I guess I was in a rush and didn't read it closely. Superstition is not religion. A true religion, like a true science, would help man by enabling him to live in concert with natural law. A religion or a science that was not true would harm man because it would interfere with our ability to survive. Are fundamentalist religions ethical guides for human survival, or dangerous superstitions that will lead to our destruction? Have fundamentalist religions promoted peace and cooperation between Muslims, Jews, and Christians, or did they actually instigate the Inquisition, the Crusades, the Thirty Years' War, and cause a senseless murder of thousands of innocent children? It is startling for most people to realize, but fundamentalist religions make no claim that they will preserve the biological existence of the human race. On the contrary, they actually pray for the day of judgment, when the majority of the human race will be exterminated. How could a worldview which has caused war, killing, and torture of millions of innocent children, and which continues to pray for the extermination of the vast majority of the human race, possible to be a good basis for a moral system intended to foster cooperation and preserve the and strengthen the human race and enable it to control the destiny of the universe? Ironically, a true religion would not have to use force or threats, because a true religion, like a true science, is simply a true description of man's relationship and responsibility to the universe, and would help any man who followed it. It would be ridiculous to suggest that you would have to force someone to do something that is for his own benefit. Only a false religion, a superstition, would have to resort to force or threats. You would not have to force people to accept a true religion any more than you would have to force them to drive cars rather than horse-drawn carriages. Paradoxically, the use of force in a religious war is actually an indication of the lack of faith, not an assertion of it. Because if a person truly believed that an all-powerful Holy Ghost was controlling everything, and the fate of the universe was not alterable by nor dependent on man, the true believer would never bother to use force, especially if he thought the all-powerful Holy Ghost had ordered him to turn the other cheek. Wars fought over things like fundamentalist religion, which people don't really believe in anyway, are at the height, the epitome of human folly. Can you imagine the absurdity of the human race being exterminated in a conflict over something they didn't really believe in anyway? If man is responsible for the destiny of man in the universe, then the purpose of the human action should be to increase man's knowledge about the power over the universe. The purpose of true religion, like the purpose of true science, should be to help man understand, adjust and manipulate the universe around him for his own benefit. A religion or a science that was not true would be an evil superstition, which would be a danger and a threat to the human race because it would reduce our ability to understand and control the environment and the ultimately reduce the probability of human survival itself. Has fundamentalist religion increased the probability of human survival by expanding man's understanding of and control over the universe around him, or has it obstructed it? An honest examination shows that the history of the fundamentalist religion has been one continued centuries-long Scopes monkey trial. In astronomy, medicine, and biology, fundamentalist religion has been the single greatest obstacle to advancement. Fundamentalist religion is guilty of crimes against humanity because by obstructing the advancement of knowledge, fundamentalist religion has actually jeopardized the health, the well-being, and the very survival of the human race. For 1,000 years, doctors were prevented from examining the human body to determine the source of the cure of disease because fundamentalist religionists believed that the examination and dissection of the human body was blasphemous. How many millions of innocent people suffered and died in agony because of it? In fact, countless millions of people would still die horrible deaths today, except that some courageous scientists risked their lives and dissected and examined the human body in spite of the threats of fundamentalist religionists. These courageous scientists thereby found cures for much of the suffering and disease that afflicted the human race. Imagine the irony when sick people today turn to fundamentalist religionists for help. If not for the delays and obstacles put in the way of scientists and doctors in the past by these same fundamentalist religionists, the disease they suffer from might well have been cured centuries ago. Fundamentalist religionists have not merely jeopardized the health, well-being, and survival of a few individuals, but of the whole human race. Let it be noted that as long as man is confined to the earth, we're subject, as other life forms are, to the periodic extinctions that have occurred in biological history. This all changed when man landed on the moon because this proved that man has potential ability to colonize other planets and thereby to exist forever independent of the solar system in which he was born. This was the greatest achievement in history of man because for the first time in history, we have the potential of immortality. Even if the earth itself is destroyed, our children may continue to exist forever on another planet. This immortality, the greatest achievement in the history of man, was obstructed and almost prevented by fundamentalist religionists. Let us never forget that the courageous scientists Galileo and Bruno, who made the moon mission possible and thereby gave man the potential of immortality, were respectively tortured and burned alive by fundamentalist religionists. Imagine the height of irony when the astronauts read from the Bible when they landed on the moon. The very people who had compiled the knowledge necessary for them to get there had been tortured and burned alive by fundamentalist religionists because of that very book. If the astronauts had died on the mission to the moon, the blame would be on fundamental religionists for retarding and obstructing the collection of knowledge necessary to make their mission a success. Imagine the ingratitude to Bruno, who gave his very life so that the astronauts might live. Remarkably, the astronauts revered the Bible, which would have destroyed them, and which did destroy their savior, Bruno. If they wish to revere those who truly serve mankind, they should worship the astronomer Bruno, the true Messiah, if there ever was one. For in fact, he gave his life to improve human knowledge, and in fact gave his life to save the lives of the astronauts and to potentially give immortality to all the children of tomorrow. In effect, then, Bruno is a shining example of the fitting symbol of all courageous scientists throughout history who gave their lives in their commitment to giving knowledge, ability, and immortality to all the children of tomorrow. The instance of astronauts reading the Bible is a prime example of how physical science has advanced while moral science has not. this is precisely the reason we are threatened with nuclear self-destruction today, because our scientific advance gave us power in the physical universe, but our failure to advance in the religious and moral sense did not give us the ability to control our actions for our own benefit. This exposes us to terrible dangers. We have the moral understanding of an ignorant savage of 2,000 years ago, but the science and power of a modern nuclear age. Because of fundamentalist religion, mankind is like a 5-year-old child playing with a loaded gun. Today, all of mankind stands figuratively in the same position as the astronauts. The astronauts were in dire jeopardy when they were floating in space, and we are in dire jeopardy in the nuclear dilemma, yet we both revere the Bible even while its fundamentalist proponents have prayed and worked for our destruction. If the human race is destroyed, the blame will be on fundamentalist religion, which blinded us and prevented us from developing a modern moral system that could save the human race, just as 400 years ago it prevented man from gaining knowledge of the purpose of human action should be to increase man's knowledge about the power over the universe. The purpose of true religion, like the purpose of true science, should be to help man understand, adjust to, and manipulate the universe around him for his own benefit. A religion or a science that was not true, but would be an evil superstition, which would be a danger and a threat to the human race because it would reduce our ability to understand and control the environment and ultimately reduce the probability of human survival itself. Has fundamentalist religion increased the probability of human survival by expanding man's understanding of and control over the universe around him, or has it obstructed it? An honest examination shows that the history of the fundamentalist religion has been one continued centuries-long Scopes monkey trial. In astronomy, medicine, and biology, fundamentalist religion has been the single greatest obstacle to advancement. Fundamentalist religion is guilty of crimes against humanity because by obstructing the advancement of knowledge, fundamentalist religion has actually jeopardized the health, well-being, and the very survival of the human race. For 1,000 years, doctors were prevented from examining the human body to determine the source and the cure of disease because of fundamental religionists believed that the examination and dissection of the human body was blasphemous. How many millions of innocent people suffered and died in agony because of that? In fact, countless millions of people would still die horrible deaths today, except that some courageous scientists risked their lives and dissected and examined the human body in spite of the threats of fundamental religionists. These courageous scientists thereby found cures to much of the suffering and disease that afflicted the human race. Imagine the irony when sick people today turn to fundamentalist religionists for help. If not for the delays and obstacles put in the path of scientists and doctors in the past by these same fundamentalist religionists, the disease they suffered from might well have been cured centuries ago. Fundamental religionists have not merely jeopardized the health, well-being, and the survival of a few individuals, but the whole human race. Let it be noted that as long as man is confined to the earth, we are subject, as other life forms are, to periodic extinctions that have occurred in biological history. This all changed when man landed on the moon because this proved that man has potential ability to colonize other planets and thereby exist forever independent of the solar system in which he was born. This was the greatest achievement in the history of man because the first time in history we have the potential of immortality. Even if the earth itself is destroyed, our children may continue to exist forever on another planet. I got the suspicion, I read that twice, but maybe it was printed in this booklet twice. This immortality, the greatest achievement in the history of man, was obstructed and almost prevented by fundamental religionists. Let us never forget the courageous scientists, Galileo and Bruno, who made the moon mission possible and thereby gave man the potential of immortality, were respectively tortured and burned alive by fundamentalist religionists. Imagine the height of irony when the astronauts read from the Bible when they landed on the moon. The very people who had compiled the knowledge necessary for them to get there had been tortured and burned alive by fundamental religionists because of that very book. If the astronauts had died on the mission to the moon, the blame would be on fundamental religionists for retarding and obstructing the collection of knowledge necessary to make their mission a success. Imagine the ingratitude to Bruno, who gave his very life so that the astronauts might live. Remarkably, the astronauts revered the Bible, which would have destroyed them, and which did destroy their savior, Bruno. If they wished to revere those who had truly served mankind, they should worship the astronaut Bruno, the true Messiah, if there's ever one, was one, for in fact he gave his life to improve human knowledge, and in fact gave his life to save the lives of the astronauts, and to potentially give immortality to all the children of tomorrow. In effect, then, Bruno is a shining example of fitting symbol of all courageous scientists throughout history who gave their lives in their commitment to giving knowledge, ability, and immortality to all the children of tomorrow. The instance of astronauts reading the Bible is a prime example of how physical science has advanced while moral science has not. This is precisely the reason we are threatened with nuclear self-destruction today, because our scientific advance gave us power in the physical universe, but our failure to advance in a religious moral sense did not give us the ability to control our actions for our own benefit. This exposes us to terrible dangers. We have the moral understanding of the ignorant savage of 2,000 years ago, but the science and power of a modern nuclear age. Because of fundamentalist religion, mankind is like a 5-year-old child playing with a loaded gun. Yes, I have read this before. I'm sorry. This booklet has a few pages that are double pages. Today, all the mankind stands figuratively in the same position as the astronauts. The astronauts were in dire jeopardy when they were floating in space, and we are in dire jeopardy in the nuclear dilemma. Yet we both revere the Bible, even while its fundamentalist proponents have prayed and worked for our destruction. If the human race is destroyed, the blame will be on fundamentalist religion, which blinded us and prevented us from developing the modern moral system that could save the human race, just as 400 years ago it prevented man from gaining knowledge about the true astronomical relationship between the Earth and the Sun. Bruno's honest astronomy saved the astronauts, and only an honest morality can save the human race. Remember, good and evil are not myths, but biological laws which are prerequisites for human survival. It is impossible for man to survive in the world or in space mission if he bases his beliefs and actions on falsehood. If you can fly to the moon on the basis of biblical Ptolemaic astronomy, you can run the earth by 2,000-year-old morality. An impartial extraterrestrial looking down on this planet would view the continuation of 2,000-years-old morality in the modern society as an absolutely extraordinary anachronism. Man's moral system is literally 2,000 years old. We have learned nothing in 2,000 years. Imagine what our world would be like today if our knowledge of chemistry, medicine, and physics had stopped advancing 2,000 years ago. Our physical science, which explains the nature and the physical universe around us, continues to advance. But religion, which explains something much more important, our own relationship to the universe itself and our relationship and responsibility to another, stopped advancing 2,000 years ago. What good does it do for us to have an understanding of the physical laws of the universe so that we can stack bricks to make a mile-high skyscraper or go to the moon if we use this same science to destroy ourselves in a nuclear war. A true religion is not superstition any more than darkness is light. A true religion is a tool to help man understand and direct his relationship and responsibility to the universe around him. If we examine our experience in physical science, we find clearly that our first advances in the realm of physical science were merely crudely sharpened stones, axes, and spears. It is hardly surprising that our first moral or religious systems were inefficient. In a figurative, metaphorical sense, our 2,000-year-old moral systems are like crudely sharpened stones, but that does not mean that we should abandon all moral or religious ideas any more than we abandon all tools because the first axes and spears were inefficient. The attempt of the... Now, here, this, we get a little hairy here as far as I'm concerned, but anyhow, I'm going to read it the way it's written. The attempt of the atheist to destroy religion is ridiculous. They assume that religion and superstition are synonymous. They're actually opposites. They likewise assume that religion and science are opposites. Actually, religion and science are strikingly similar because they are both attempts, however imperfect, to help man understand the world around him. I'm going to have to try to get my head around that paragraph about the atheists. And I don't think that an atheist is trying to destroy... I mean, I think he's trying to destroy false religion, that's for sure, because it does much of what they preach doesn't even exist. So that's a paragraph we're going to have to dwell on a little bit. We should not think in terms of destroying false religion, but rather creating a true one. Well, I think that we're going to have to destroy the old one before we can establish a new one myself. Now, I've got this marked here again, page 20. And I'm thinking that I'm screwed up again here. Now, this one starts with, religion is not merely science. And I think that's where I marked it from the last time, and I should have read from that point. So if I'm screwing you up today, don't blame me. It's just terrible Tommy. Religion is not merely science. Religion, like science, is man's attempt to understand the universe around him, but is religion merely science? Is the purpose of life merely the acquisition of knowledge? Does man exist merely to serve science, or does science exist merely to serve man? If science is, in the final analysis, only a tool, only an elaborate hammer created by man, how can we make man the servant of the hammer? How can science be preeminent over man any more than a plow or a hammer can? From the point of view of evolutionary ethics, even the most brilliant physics in the world is ultimately of no more value than a stone tied to a stick compared to the sacred divinity of the race of man that created it. Our prime directive and the purpose of life must be to maintain and improve the consciousness of the universe. Scientific knowledge will be ever increasing as a direct result of that. Science is a tool created by man and is less than man. How can a tool, regardless of how elaborate, possibly be greater than the life that created it? It would be the height of folly for man to become so fascinated and enamored of a tool which he himself had created as to be prompted to sacrifice his own life or dignity to it. There can be no greater error and no greater evil than that placing man beneath science. Man is the most sacred divine creature in all the universe, and all things are to serve him. Science is not God. Life is. To place knowledge or scientific above life is to deify science. Well, I think we'd be better to deify science than most other things. The deification of science is atheism, which I'm still more inclined to go along with. Some atheists would deny this, but if they did not believe in anything beyond pragmatic worldly convenience, why would they bother to be atheists? By denying God, they demonstrate greater allegiance to the incorporeal and other worldly values of science than to worldly comfort, which they could better acquire by acquiescing to believe whatever the crowd believes. This gets a little muddled as far as I'm concerned. However, atheism does not fulfill the purpose of religion by describing man's relationship to the universe. Even if there were no God, well, there isn't a God. How does it help us have that information? They do not tell us what the human condition is, but rather what it is not. It does not matter what is false, if only matters what is true. Can knowing what is not true provide our children with food and prevent wars? Atheism does not provide us with the mathematics of survival, knowledge of good and evil, any more than superstition did. I differ there. I differ. In fact, it is the antithesis of this religious ethic because it denies the absolute moral responsibilities exist. To accept science as synonymous with religion is to make atheism essentially our religion. No, atheism is not a religion. Technically, you can't make it a religion. Then we have the paradoxical situation in which he who denies that man has absolute responsibility to the universe is the very man defining and explaining what responsibility is. The atheist's assertion that there is no absolute morality is just as dangerous as the fundamentalist assertion of false morality. It is clear that the morality is a biological law, and that the acceptance of moral responsibility is necessarily a human existence. By denying that man has an absolute moral responsibility to the universe, atheists are denying that man has an absolute moral responsibility to maintain his own existence. This gets a little... it seems like we're almost going around in circles with this thing. I guess I should have read the whole thing before I put it on the show. I'm a little disappointed here in the end why he goes out of his way to attack atheism, when atheism is simply trying to say that God that Christians and the Jews and the Islam worship is not there. And science is what we need. And that's what National Socialist Germany was doing such an excellent job advancing science. And so, anyhow, I'm going to put this away for a while and think about it. I don't want to get you off the track, too far off the track, or I don't even want to get myself too far off the track, because it's hard enough to compete and argue and debate against these fake religions and these cults that are leading people into more and more warfare and atomic bombs and all that kind of shit, and get all confused, you know. Anyhow, this may be one of my most confusing shows, but you get the fact that reading a few pages there twice with the booklet had duplicated, you know, this guy's whacked out, man. Oh, if this guy's still alive, I gotta contact him and ask him a few questions of exactly where he's coming from. I don't have a lot of time left, so I'm gonna reach over in the library and pick up another booklet that I've had for years. It was printed in 1959, and it's called The Race Problem, Segregation or Integration, The Cosmic Laws of Evolution, The Great Controversy of Our Time, written by Dr. John H. Manas, M-A-N-A-S. He was from a group called the Pythagorean Society out of New York City. The Race Problem, Segregation or Integration. Many persons today, in their ambition to become great and famous through a quick and easy way, without possessing suitable qualifications for such a status, or for their selfish political interests, have taken up a certain trend from some religious, philosophical, or humanitarian movement, which they twist to suit their purposes according to plan. Then they advance these ideas in a most fanatical manner, trying to convert the entire world to them, to the only truth in their movement, which is going to save the world and solve all the problems created by human ignorance and disobedience. We must remember, under cosmic law, man evolves individually. Animals, being controlled by a group soul, evolve as a class or as a species. Man is an individualized soul, and as such he travels alone. In this case of human evolution, the soul unfoldment segregation applies. The law, like attracts like, rules supreme in the universe, which results in the segregation of similar species in animals and among men, and of similar unfoldment of the physical, emotional, and mental and spiritual planes. Many times we mortals conceive strange ideas and notions which we think to be right, and as such we try in our human ignorance and egotistical enthusiasm to force upon others, upon the nation, upon the entire world, for certain selfish motives or for political gain. One of these latest notions is integration. We want ultimately to integrate all the races of the world into one international mongrelized subrace for the sake of equality and individual freedom. And the strangest thing of all is the fact that in this political agitation and unphilosophical and unnatural scheme, and the backward races are organized, financed, and directed by outside persons to further their own selfish purposes in carrying out certain plans. That's like Hillary Clinton, you know, the great white Amazon queen of the Negroes. In fact, I say she has adopted the entire black race, and she would lead it in the destruction of her own race. Of course, most of the rest of the politicians are the same way. They're just maybe not quite as bad. It is a well-known fact that to all scientists, philosophers, and metaphysicians that there is no equality and freedom in nature. The very moment man commits the foolish mistake of proclaiming that all men are free and equal to each other in society, he places himself against the cosmic law of evolution, which is based upon the cosmic fact that all things and all beings are unequal to each other. All life works for its prospective betterment on the path of evolution. Today, the freedom that man claims to enjoy is no freedom at all, but only license. He commits gradual suicide in his daily life by choosing to follow the path of least resistance, which encourages violation of the cosmic laws. How evolution works. A free man is only he who has conquered his weaknesses, vices, wickedness, greed, hatred, and so forth, and who has liberated himself from spiritual ignorance, which is the greatest master of man in the world today. The teachings of philosophical schools, ancient and modern, all over the world, tell us that segregation is the way of nature through which evolution works for the improvement of the species of animals and of races of men. Through segregation, the best among animals and men is gathered together through the process of epilogue, or selection, to produce a better type of an animal or a superior race of men. Thus the white race is the product of the working of this natural law. Each race has its own particular characteristic, qualities, and potentials, all of which is needed in the structure of the world of a variety of people and nations. Therefore, all races are important and essential in the framework and collective economy of the earth. And for keeping the balance of humanity as a whole. Nature could not have made such a colossal mistake in creating the human races without any reason and use for them. Consequently, the races, in order to perform the tasks assigned to them by nature and to fulfill their destiny, should be kept pure and separate from each other. Of course, it should be understood that before the highest and ultimate cosmic laws, all things and beings, men and races are potentially equal regardless of their present degree of evolution. This is an entirely different proposition from that of proclaiming that all beings, all men, all races are equal per se. The solution of this important problem of our society today is rather the task of scientists, a philosopher, and a metaphysician than that of a dogmatic edict of a lawyer, a judge, or a politician, or of a demagogue. Diversification in evolution, since evolution is a basic law of creation, and means a continuous progress of all things and beings, it logically follows that there is no equality in anything in nature. Everything exists in an environment of things and being unequal and different from each other, and they all strive to improve themselves through effort and a continuous struggle for survival and supremacy. The cosmic fact brings us to the logical conclusion that in a society where equality of all men is proclaimed and practiced, anarchy, corruption, and degeneration gradually set in, as it's doing right now in this country, resulting in its destruction. The world history is replete with such examples. On the contrary, a well-organized and progressive society is based upon brotherly differentiation and respect for self and for others according to their individual inner values. Throughout nature, the law of survival of the fittest rules. Although to the average person this law seems to be cruel, nevertheless, in the last analysis, it demonstrates the supreme justice and wisdom of nature, and it helps to maintain universal progress in evolution. Everywhere in nature, the stronger, the superior, and the more advanced among both animals and men prevails either through physical fear or through respect or intellectual and spiritual superiority. The working of this natural pattern maintains the harmonies in society through discipline by classifying each of its unequal members according to its own merits and demerits. At present, by proclaiming equality per se for all members of our society, we are responsible for lawlessness, hypocrisy, dishonesty, greed and corruption, the degradation and the crimes that exist. Pythagoras, the father of Greek philosophy and one of the greatest and wisest men who ever lived, realized the importance of this cosmic law, and its application to society gave us his famous formula through the following precept, quote, "The man who knows more than I know is my father. He who knows less than I is my son. And the man who knows as much as I know is my brother." All of which proves conclusively that the cause of present-day chaos in the world is the result of the spreading of the man-made unnatural philosophy of equality among all men, instead of practicing know thyself and moral discipline, which form the foundation of all philosophical systems, ancient and modern, and which is one of the basic laws in nature. Opinions of prominent persons. Major General George Van Horn Mosley wrote on this subject April 15, 1959, quote, "The most vicious enemy of freedom and liberty is equality. Republics throughout all history have had their birth, their years of vigorous growth, their heyday of world success, which remained only so long as the race that gave the nation its basic strength remained pure. With the introduction and interbreeding of lower types, decline came, and finally national death." Reverend G.T. Gillespie, D.D., President Emeritus of Brookhaven College in Jackson, Mississippi, in his address made before the Synod of Mississippi of the Presbyterian Church, November 4, 1954, stated, "In all nature, the herd instinct prevails to a greater or lesser degree, and all living creatures are drawn together in larger or smaller groups by certain affinities based upon common physical characteristics. Animals, for instinct, mate only with their own kind, perpetuating their own species and transmitting their natural and acquired characteristics to their offspring. No intermingling or crossbreeding with animals of widely different characteristics takes place except under abnormal or artificial conditions. I noticed that in my bird arena, I call it my arena, where I have this platform that I put a lot of seeds on every day for the birds. And it's very interesting how the birds segregate themselves, and even on the platform they do. And it's interesting now that we have squirrels that are climbing onto the platform. The squirrels are at one end and the birds are at the other. And I'm making video. I'll have a video of this available. So you learn a lot by observing nature in the wild. The old adage, birds of a feather flock together, only expresses a fact of common observation and universal experience. There are many varieties of the bird family, but under natural conditions, so far as known, bluebirds never mate with redbirds. Doves never mate with blackbirds. In fact, I watched the doves drive the blackbirds off the arena. I never knew doves were aggressive like that, but they sit there, and if these big blackbirds try to give them any trouble, they run them off. Or mockbirds with the jays. In fact, I always thought the bluejay, I always thought they were so bold and tough. But in my arena, they don't seem to be as bold and tough as people say. The fact that man also is a gregarious animal, and the human beings everywhere and under all conditions of life tend to segregate themselves into families, tribes, nations, or racial groups only goes to prove that all human relations are regulated by this universal law of nature. Segregation tends to promote progress. It is the elementary principle of livestock breeding, that improvement of type comes through the careful selection of breeding stock and the rigid separation of animals of dissimilar or undesirable characteristics. Imagine if farmers use the present so-called liberal ideas on race mixing and equality. Why, the whole agricultural system of the world would go through the cracks. I mean, they could not survive because they'd be breeding unfit animals or less fit with other animals that are superior. Imagine if they tried to run a plow horse back in the old days, try to run it at the Kentucky Derby or run a famous racehorse trying to pull a plow or a wagon. I mean, it just doesn't work. But they don't see it. You could see it in any farmer's field, the reality of the situation, but they're so blinded by this nonsense that they don't see it. The phenomenal development of the racehorse, the draft horse, the beef and the dairy breeds of cattle furnish impressive evidence that segregation promotes development and progress, and that it may be continued almost indefinitely by the consistent application of the principle, whereas the intermingling of breeding stock results invariably in the production of scrubs or mongrel types and the downgrading of the whole herd. The same principle applies with equal force to the progress of human development. It is a noteworthy fact that down through the centuries, the most conspicuous advances in the human progress have been made by those peoples who, by reason of circumstances or by deliberate preferences, have been isolated to a great extent from other nations and races over long periods of time, and thus have been free to develop their own peculiar genius and distinctive characteristics and culture. Quote, in a similar manner, the Greeks, by reason of geographical situation and other circumstances, enjoyed for centuries comparatively isolation from other people of the world, whom they designated as barbarians. By reason of this separation, they preserved with remarkable success the purity of their racial stock, for hundreds of years, and succeeded in developing a physical vigor and vitality and intellectual acuteness and artistic perfection and a political idealism which made Hellenic culture the pattern and inspiration of all Western civilization. Well, I'm going to stop there. I had this show in two parts. I got to put them together, and considering that pamphlet that I sort of got off the track on, which has a lot of good stuff in it. Basically, I agree with a whole lot of the positions of the person who wrote that. And I don't believe that he put his name on this pamphlet. Like I said before, I'm going to use the address that's in this thing. I said this one here is dedicated to Captain Fitzroy, HMS Beagle. That sounds like a ship. And this was put out to, John L. Hart, P.O. Box 72, New Concord, Kentucky, 42076. Since that's quite a long time ago that this was put together, I'm going to contact him and see if he's still alive. And maybe we can clear some of his stuff up about atheism and so forth. The practical study. I like this book I just picked up and reading to you. We'll continue with this. And I remember Mosley. I never met him. I think he might have been out of the picture before I came on the scene. 14-5, I'll see you tomorrow. Freya's Day. Freya's Day here in the bunker. Otherwise known as She-Wolf Day, dedicated to the she-wolves out there. And watch out for those she-wolves because they'll kick your ass.